is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Afghanistan. After Afghanistan, much to say about what went wrong. These many months later, Afghan families making their way to other countries. Here in Connecticut, we have two new families coming in, artisans and their children. And their story is shocking. But at the same time, how they arrived in Connecticut needs to be explained by the collapse of the Afghan government and the Afghan military and the Afghan police. And from what we understand from Washington, the poor intelligence gathering by the U.S. and its allies and the strange conduct that can be identified about the contractors, the money, all of the wealth that was poured into Afghanistan over decades. And what it's come to right now is darkness visible. I welcome a former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, Hussein Haqqani of the Hudson Institute, and Bill Rajo, senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He keeps the Long War Journal. Gentlemen, good evening to you. I read from the Washington Post most recently. The latest assessment by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, examined the roots of the Afghan military's demise at the end of America's longest war. Many of the findings confirm previous reporting by the Post and other outlets on Taliban-brokered surrender deals, but also shed new light on the intrigue and suspicion that consumed the Afghan leadership in its final days. Bill, I come to you because this isn't just about intelligence gathering and its failure to warn or its ignoring the facts on the ground. This is about the government, the leadership, the phone calls, the diplomats, and the deals. What deals, Bill? What do we know about these deals? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, I actually think there was very little, if nothing new, in this report from the Special Investigator General. We watched all of this take unfold in front of our eyes. I mean, it was clear what was happening in Afghanistan. The Taliban was taking the fight from the rural areas, which the U.S. military, NATO, and the Afghan government ignored. It was using this to increase its power and come in and enter more the more built up areas, the suburban areas of Afghanistan. I mean, and they were cutting deals with local officials who read the situation on the ground. And at the highest level, the Afghan government was largely ignoring this. It was pretending, it was running its Potemkin government. So I was less impressed with the report from the Special Investigator General for Afghan Reconstruction and more impressed with the Department of Defense Inspector General report. That one had a lot of very good information. We've stood up a what they call the Over the Horizon Counterterrorism Center, $19 billion, a staff of 100 people. Its mission is to deal with the situation in Afghanistan and terror groups operating there. Zero strikes since the U.S. left Afghanistan. There's your tax dollars at work. General Kirilla, the new commander of CENTCOM, he's willing to cooperate with the Taliban. This is more of the same, John. Remember, we have to remember General McKenzie, the previous commander, called Afghan or the Taliban our partners. $7.1 billion in U.S. military equipment left in Afghanistan. And then here to me is the biggest example that we've learned nothing whatsoever from our 20 years of war in Afghanistan. The Department of Defense and CENTCOM says that the Islamic State Corps, Khorasan province, is the greatest threat emanating from Afghanistan. And meanwhile, the Taliban is controlling Afghanistan, all 34 provinces. I'm looking at its videos of training its fighters in military bases, no longer at these remote locations and makeshift camps. And it's sheltering al-Qaeda and a host of other regional and global terror groups. And yet the U.S. military thinks the Islamic State Khorasan province is the greatest threat in Afghanistan. This is, you know, a continuing failure of reasoning and a failure of intelligence and a failure to understand who the actual enemy is in Afghanistan.
The Washington Post story dates the Taliban deal and Doha, February 2020. It then adds that Ashraf Ghani, the president of Afghanistan, began to fear there was a U.S. plot to oust him This is the Washington Post. And so he began, quote, changing commanders constantly to bring back some of the old school communist generals who he saw as loyal to him instead of the American trained young officers who he mostly feared. Did you see that in the reporting from CENTCOM or from the Pentagon or from the news releases at the time between February of 2020 and the summer of 2021?
So, really, I guess why this is all unremarkable to me is I was hearing this from people in the U.S., call it the intelligence and military analysts, right? I kept asking, you know, all right, if why, you know, if Ghani is this bad, why aren't they getting rid of him? And they would point me to look at him, look at the replacements around him. He's putting loyal people around him. And we did see indications of this in the press. There was a lot of confusion as to why these cronies were being put around him. Ghani feared a coup. He made his government and his military coup proof. He put people, yes men around him, people that he could trust ahead of people who can actually affect the military situation.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you. And your measure of this report coming many months after the collapse in Afghanistan, was it common knowledge? Was it well known that Ghani was what you say, dangerously uninformed about the direction of the war, bringing in old generals from the old days in order to protect himself, I guess, against a coup? Was that generally known in 2020, 2021, into the end in August of last year?
John, look, this report is a formality. It's a formality that is required because that's how Americans do things. But the fact of the matter is that this war effort collapsed because of a bumper sticker. Both sides of the political aisle started believing in quote unquote no forever wars. Once they started doing that, they set into motion a number of things without any regard to the situation on ground, the political situation, the military situation. The Afghan military had been trained to be contractor dependent. President Biden withdrew the contractors on whim, quickly, not realizing that the army we have trained will end up needing these contractors to keep the equipment, the high-tech equipment we've given them, working. Then, politically, the moment you start talking to the enemy, you are signaling that the enemy, and you do not talk to your ally, you're signaling that the enemy is more important than your ally. The Americans did not have official talks with Ghani. They did not do a deal with the Ghani government to withdraw troops. They did a deal, which was done in Iraq, for example. The U.S. did a deal with the government about withdrawal. Here, the U.S. was talking to the Taliban. So everybody in the Afghan countryside knew that the Americans have more, or at least believed, that the Americans have reconciled themselves to Taliban ruling Afghanistan. That created an entire sort of a psychosis in which people switched around. And so the insecurity that breeds is obvious. I don't know why anybody would pretend that they did not understand that American policies were making President Ghani and his government feel more insecure, were making commanders more receptive to deals with the Taliban, and to average Afghan soldiers to make them think about desertion.
Bill, in your measure of Ghani at the time, was he communicating his doubts, his challenge to the American military or to the considerations around him, or was he keeping it to himself?
The Afghan government was clear it was unhappy with negotiations and then subsequently the withdrawal. We have to remember he and his entire national security establishment came to Washington. I think it was late May or early June to try and convince President Biden to change course. But President Biden, you know, of course, rejected this. He stuck with the withdrawal. They did understand what was happening. They did understand. But the reaction to it was just absolutely puzzling. He never worked to mobilize the country. He never worked to secure the areas that he needed to secure and ensure he had a rear area place to fight. That particularly would have been central and northern Afghanistan, the sort of the nucleus of what would have been Northern Alliance 2.0. But, you know, he pretended that he was in control up to the very last minute. It was very puzzling watching all of this. But, you know, Afghan officials, they knew it was happening and yet at the same time pretended that it wasn't happening. they tried very hard. You know, at the very end, I mentioned this on the show numerous times. When I talked to Afghan officials, I tried to tell them, you need to be prepared to be on your own. The U.S. is leaving. And up to the bitter end, they believed that the U.S. would stay, that the U.S. would recognize the failure in how they were acting and what the withdrawal would do, and the U.S. would come to their rescue. And it didn't happen, and we now have a Taliban-controlled Afghan state.
I'm speaking with Bill Rajo and former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, Hussain Haqqani of the Hudson Institute. We're reflecting upon what coulda, shoulda, woulda in Afghanistan. However, the present circumstances require immediate analysis. So when we come back, we're going to Karachi, Pakistan, where there's a report of the former prime minister creating turmoil, and the turmoil could be undermining the new government in Islamabad. I'm John Batchelor.